August blends and Methodist Queen works only case.
Let's cut the bull.
Thanks for tuning in to Rebellion Radio, the Hunger Games podcast.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Rebellion Radio, episode number 19. I'm Hurley Commons.
I'm Alex Bolova.
And I'm Elena Thomas.
And welcome back to our first post-movie episode. Well, actually, that's not true. The last one was the first technical, but our first post-movie review show. So I guess that's not really that big of an occasion. But I want to start off the show with some rather sad news. Since the movie ended, look, the fans, you guys have been great. We've had a really fun time on the show, but I think it's time to move on. The show is coming to an end.
The fandom is just dead. There's nothing. Nobody loves the Hunger Games anymore.
Yeah, I know. I mean, it's made over $200 million at the box office. It has no future.
No one is reading the books because of the movie. No one.
There is nothing left for us. April Fools. Okay, that seemed funnier in my head.
We got you guys.
Okay.
Like, what?
The show will be continuing for hopefully centuries, so not to worry. Also, we want to announce that we will indeed be beginning Chapter Chat for Catching Fire, not this week, or maybe not even next week, or not next episode, but we're just going to take a little break, soak in all the Hunger Games stuff, and report on that, do some fun segments there, and then we will continue our Chapter Chat installments after that. So just to clear up some questions about that. Let's jump straight into the news this week. First news announcement is that the Hunger Games iOS game has been released. So have you guys taken a look at this?
No, and I don't want to.
Okay, I played it on my sister's iPod. Did not like? No.
Okay, so here's what I think about it. First of all, the 8-bit thing, I don't know, I'm not sure, because it looks pretty cool, but the gameplay, Alex, do you get the gameplay?
I kind of get it. I mean, you just tap where you want the arrow to go, and you jump from top to bottom, but there's not a lot to it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm actually playing it right now, and it's like, there is not really that much to it. I don't mind it. I mean, it's not, like, that great of a game, but it's not like, oh, this is awful. I wish they didn't make this, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to ask you guys again. So the Hunger Games actual video game for, like, an actual console, the Lionsgate has announced that they're kind of, like, in talks for this. They're kind of debating this. What do you guys think of that? Like, I know we've talked about this briefly, but now that we actually have an iOS game, would you guys want to see, like, a full-fledged game?
Honestly, I find it kind of, like, I don't know, ironic, I guess, in a sad way. Like, how there's, like, all these games, like, we haven't talked about this yet, it's, like, the last thing we'll talk about, but there's, like, the Hunger Games Adventures on Facebook, and then there's,
yeah,
like, all these things, and it's, like, doesn't it seem kind of, like, I don't know, I guess you could say ironic, but, like, against the whole message, you know? Like,
yeah, hypocritical, right?
I don't know, yeah.
Yeah. Okay, I'm dubbing this, it's called the Hunger Games Conundrum. Or the Hunger Games Paradox, whichever you prefer. But basically, the Hunger Games is about, like, this whole games that everyone gets obsessed about and everyone's, like, all crazy about, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And everyone devotes their time to, and then they all dress up and, you know, the Capitol, like, is sick and they, you know, love these games. And yet, the Hunger Games fandom is pretty much like the Capitol. There's all this, like, I mean, you know, all this merchandise around it, all this huge franchise around it, and, it's hard, because it's, like, we want to be excited about the movie, but it's, because it kind of mirrors the Capitol, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And if, like, they start making games about it, it's, like, in the movie, Haymitch sees that the boy playing with the sword with his sister. It's kind of like that, and I'm just, like, I don't know, because the game would be fun, but it's kind of going against, like,
everything that the thing is supposed to be about.
My god, my mind is blown.
Yeah, I know. The Hunger Games Conundrum.
I like Paradox better.
Okay, but. Paradox.
Paradox Conundrum. Alright, you fans, you can decide. Please leave us a message on our Facebook page. Should be the Conundrum or the Paradox.
Yeah, the game is out, and email in if you played it, what do you think about it, etc., etc. Alex, what's the next news story?
So, Lionsgate isn't holding specific Hunger Games screenings for Academy members, which means that a lot of people that vote for, like, Best Picture, Best Actor, haven't actually seen the Hunger Games yet. So what does this mean for Oscar chances?
Is that a good or a bad thing? I have no way. I have, like, limited knowledge of how Oscars work or anything, but...
Alex, I'm looking at you right now.
Okay, this is a bad thing, I would say.
This is a bad thing? Okay. Well, okay, some people are saying it's a bad thing, but people are also saying, like, if they screen it closer to the end of the year, it would be better for its chances because it'll be in the Oscar voters' minds. And I think that does make sense because... if you look at, like, Best Picture nominees, say, for, like, this year's Oscars or, like, the whole of the all the nominees, it's, like, 90% of them had to be released, like, in the last 2 months of the year.
Right.
And, you know, this was released in March, so early. I don't think many people would remember it if it was screened now. So maybe it is a good thing. Maybe it'll have a better chance if it's screened, like, later on, maybe, like, December.
Actually, yeah, that's a very good point.
But as we said on our last show, I'm not sure how much this will get Oscar attention-wise.
Possibly best makeup. That's my guess.
Best makeup. What did we say? Best
costumes?
Sound editing or something? Yeah, costumes definitely, maybe.
It should definitely get best makeup. I mean, think of, like PETA and The Rock and, and like, all their wounds and stuff. Everything looked really awesome. But, yeah, I guess that's the only thing I could really see happening for it, I guess.
Yeah.
Right.
So, Elena, what is the next news story?
So, the box office totals for the Hunger Games movie are pretty amazing, and so the midnight screenings alone made $19.74 million. The opening weekend domestic total was $152 million. The opening week, that's $189 million. And the current estimated worldwide total, although it's not finished yet because the movie is still in theaters, is $397 million. So, yeah, that's pretty amazing.
I mean, I know like it broke the midnight record when we first recorded, but then it's breaking all these other records. The opening week is fourth place of any movie. That's insane. For the first movie of a franchise.
Yes, but yeah.
I want to remind people, the budget for this was $78 million. The worldwide total right now is five times the budget.
Yeah.
So
it was definitely an investment.
Yeah, this could not have turned out any better for the film. And, yeah, it's awesome. Alright, so the last news story is one that's very up in the air. We don't know really what's going on really at all. And it is, will Gary Ross return for Catching Fire? So basically, IndieWire reported that Gary Ross is out, and that he will not be directing Catching Fire. Okay, everyone is in a panic. Some people are happy, some people are sad. I personally would have been very sad if he had been gone. I don't know, what do you guys think if Gary does not return? Would you think that would be bad or good?
Honestly, I'm not really too sure what other directors would pick this up. I mean, I know they'll find somebody else. I'm sure, hopefully, he'll do great. But, I mean, we've seen what Gary Ross has done, and what he's done is awesome. And I'm really worried that this will, like, just ruin, like, the tone. Like, each director sort of brings their own ideas to something.
Yeah.
And so if you just sort of leave in the middle of a franchise, then, like, the ideas and tones just sort of shift. Like, with the X-Men, like, the original X-Men trilogy, Bryan Singer directed the first two, and then they got a completely different guy for the last one, and they just kind
of... Perfect example.
...ruined everything. Yeah. Well, not ruined. I mean, I like parts of it, but it changed
the
idea.
It was a lot different. I completely agree, because people are saying, well, for Harry Potter, they needed multiple directors to keep it variety. And I get the whole variety argument, but the difference with Hunger Games is that there's only three movies, or, you know, four movies or whatever.
With Harry Potter, there's eight movies, so it's like... It's not likely that you'll have one director through all of them, but this is only three. It's not like that there's that many to direct.
Yeah, I mean, for this one, it's, you know, it's not like this super long epic, you know? And I think keeping the tone consistent like that is definitely going to make it a lot better because, you know, he really understands the book and all that, and he's always said, you know, I love the book, I'm this huge fan. And I think, I feel like if they get anybody else, there hasn't been really any of the directors that have been vocal about it.
Well, honestly, I don't even see this actually happening. Like, who is this who's reporting this anyway? Indie Wire? It doesn't sound like it's that, like, I don't know. Like, maybe these people are really reliable and popular or something, but I'm just like, who the heck are these people? And I don't really see it happening. I could see it happening, but I just, I don't know. It doesn't, like, maybe I'll be wrong, maybe next episode I'll be completely wrong and Gary Ross will leave, and I don't want him to, I want him to stay because it's like you guys were saying, I think it'll throw everything off and it'll be just weird. So, I don't know, I don't really see it, I hope it doesn't happen, and I don't really think it's going to, unless a bunch of other blogs or something come out saying this also.
Okay, so a couple of things. First of all, IndieWire is, you know, it's like this established movie site/blog. So it's not like these are like these random people. But there is another site, Deadline, which is also, you know, a pretty established site, that's saying, despite reports that have spread like wildfire on showbiz websites, we hear from multiple sources close to catching fire that director Gary Ross has not formally withdrawn from the Hunger Games sequel, unquote. So, okay. So basically other people are saying he's not out. I think this makes a good discussion on who we would want to direct, but like, we really don't know for as of now. And I think the main issue was salary, actually. He wanted a salary raise, which, I mean, I guess the salary for the first one, I've heard like Jennifer joke about her salary was like pretty small compared to other roles. So I don't know, but we will definitely hear more about that in the coming weeks.
Yep.
It'd be interesting to see, like, what their budget was comprised of, you know? Like, what made it up?
Yeah, the different parts.
Yeah, like, how much was spent on actors' salaries, and then everything else, like, sets and makeup and CGI and whatever.
Yeah. So, that's it for the news this week, everyone. Email in if you your thoughts on Gary Ross returning, if you want variety, if you don't. So, the next segment is emails and comments, and this week we will we don't even have to dedicate it, because that's all we got emails on, but all the emails today will be fan responses to the film, and since we got so many, thank you for emailing, and everybody, continue your emails if you haven't gotten your thoughts in, but since we got so many, we're going to just read off snippets of emails, because there are just a lot, and we want to get in as many voices as possible. Yeah,
you guys can write a lot about the Hunger Games.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, keep it coming, but we don't have time to read it all. So, Alex, read off the first email or snippet of an email from Justin. Yep.
So Justin says, "Hey, Rebels, I thought the movie was epic. I didn't have many problems with it. Here are a few of my thoughts. Gil's first appearance was way too out of the blue. The Capitol's appearance was very realistic to my imagination. The Game Maker's room was very futuristic and Capitol-ish. Haymitch was hilarious with the changes from the book. The wolf mutations were ugly, and Rue's death was epic. I cried."
Very nice, Justin. All right, so the next one is a special shout-out to Anika from Australia. I'm sorry, I still don't know how to pronounce it. I'm sure she emailed in saying... Wait, what?
Is it like Anika?
Annika? Yeah, that seems the most natural.
Annika. I don't know.
I think she emailed in saying, "This is how you pronounce it," and I forgot. I'm sorry. Anyway, Annika sent us her 100, like, a list of 100 of her favorite things about the Hunger Games movie, and it was awesome. Yeah, we cannot read that whole list off, so I just wanted to shout out to Annika. But we have a snippet of an email from Adele, and she says, "Josh did the best he..." Okay, so this email was about the script, just a little context. "Josh did the best he could with the script. But the script, PETA, was not the book, PETA. He didn't have the same sweet lines in the love stuff. The thing that bothered me the most was that there were no use of lines that everyone was waiting for. Some advice, stay alive, and also, you can kiss me now, etc. Even though I was angry at the script, all the things they added, I loved. Every scene with Sonika Crane was brilliant." So, I do agree with what she said. The script, PETA, was not the book, PETA. Because I love Josh Hutcherson's, like, acting and all that, but it did feel like he wasn't as witty.
I think that they kind of, like, I think they put elements of Book Peter in, you know, like, obviously. But, like, overall, he was a little bit different.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, like, the way he, like, acted, I mean, he still has that same purity. That's PETA, you know.
Yeah.
They don't own me, blah, blah, blah. Good for you, PETA. But, like, it's, he seems a little different in his jokes. Like, he didn't seem as jokey.
Yeah, he didn't also seem, like, quite as charismatic. Because, you know, it's always said, like, a billion times throughout the series that he's, like, really good with words and talking and just, like, through the interview with Caesar.
Yeah.
And just throughout the film, he didn't seem quite like that. Like, not that he wasn't likable, it just wasn't, like, he...
Yeah, I got what you were saying. It just seemed like, compared to Katniss, he was charismatic, but it wasn't like, whoa, charisma overload.
Yeah.
But, I don't think it was necessarily a bad thing, but, Elena, what is the next email?
Alright, so the next email is from Jada, and she says, "Hey guys, love your podcast. What I noticed that you didn't mention is Elizabeth Banks as Effie. I want to say that Effie is also the comic relief of the movie, as well as Haymitch. For example, when Katniss attacks Haymitch on the train with her knife, Effie shouts out in distress, 'That is mahogany,' oblivious to Haymitch's safety. Also, Effie and Haymitch kind of go at each other throughout the movie, adding more comedy along the way." And I agree completely.
Yeah, I can't believe you actually forgot to mention Effie on the last...
is mahogany!
Every time I talk about this movie with my friends, they yell, "That is mahogany!"
I know, and the lines popped up all over the meme world, so...
Oh my god, I know, all over Tumblr, like, you'll see, like, there was this one thing, you know, where the tree falls in front of Cadmus and it's on fire?
Oh, yeah.
There's this thing of her going, "That is mahogany!"
That's hilarious. No,
now
but,
I'm kind of at the point like, oh my gosh, I'm so sick of hearing that line.
I know.
It's Wingardium Leviosa, not Leviosa, kind of line of the whole franchise, I guess.
That one line that's so funny.
That's just overused all
that's
the time now.
But I still laugh at it. But yeah, Elizabeth Banks as Effie, I thought she was great. I mean, we saw most of it in the trailer. I mean, that was kind of her, you know, big scene, and then she had other scenes in the middle, but I liked her. I also liked her and Ed Haymitch's dynamic, as Jada said. Jada. I liked the line when Haymitch goes what's her name? Katniss. And she goes, "Nice dress." And he looks at Heffy, "Not yours." Okay, and then, Alex, why don't you take the next email from Will?
Yep. So Will says, "Because so many theaters were showing the movie, the theater put together an actual Reaping and Hunger Games. Each theater had one guy one girl randomly selected to compete in archery and trivia. Also, parachutes with prizes and boxes were flown down from the second story of the lobby as if they were from sponsors, and people would try to grab them. There was also a costume contest, which was very cool. The winner got Katniss' character poster."
Wow. Oh my gosh, where does this guy live? I want to go to the Catching Fire premiere.
I know, I'm just like thinking, holy crap. They had little sponsor things coming from the second story of the lobby. That's insane.
I mean, I totally would have won the costume contest. Thank you very much.
Oh yeah, who'd you dress up as up again? Rue?
Yes, I was dressed as Rue. But random trivia, I guess.
Yeah, that would have been fun. I was just thinking, wow, my theater really sucks. But yeah, that was pretty cool. The next email is from Hunter, and he says, "If you look online, you can find an interview post the movie premiere. In it, the actor who played Foxface revealed that her real name in the movie is Finch."
Huh.
So it should be Birdface.
It should be what?
It should be Birdface. Because a Finch is a kind of bird.
Oh!
Ha ha ha.
So clever.
Ha, 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 ha.
No, but that's... Okay, so we, like... what's her name? Jacqueline Everson made this deal about... You'll find out her real name, and we never heard it, I think, but... Finch! Now we have a name!
Hmm.
Am I the only one excited by this?
You know, random tidbit.
Exciting.
The show I'm currently in at my school is How to Succeed in Business Without Really Trying, and the main character's name is Finch. So now all I'm expecting is, you know, Foxface to break out into song, like, every 5 minutes.
That would be interesting.
Okay, so the next email is from Gary, at... Oh wait, is this Elena's? I can't keep track.
I don't know. Sure.
Elena, why don't you read the next email?
So Gary says, "Hey Rebellion Radio, you guys should talk about if Rue had gone on a killing spree and killed everyone and won the games."
I would watch that
yeah,
movie.
That'd be entertaining.
It'd be called Rue, the girl from District 11. : Gone Wild. Rated R. Now playing.
Okay,
and
then.
And the next email is from Casey, and she says, "I really enjoyed your movie review episode. I don't remember if you discussed this already, but what did you think about Katniss completely breaking down after Rue's death? She reacted a lot less strongly in the book. Instead of sobbing like crazy, she basically moved on. I can't decide if I hate the movie reaction for making her seem so too weak, or love it for giving her a more human response. Thoughts? Thanks, and love the show, Casey." So, I remember, I forgot to mention this in the last episode. What did you guys think of her, like, I remember it cut straight to her, like panicking on, like, a log or something. She was sitting down. What did you guys think of that scene? Because she makes a good point. Does it make her seem weak or, like, natural? I don't know.
You know, I think I liked it. I think it might have gone on a bit too long, just in terms of editing.
Yeah.
But I did like that we did see her actually have emotions.
Yeah, because throughout so much of the movie, she's just so, like stone-faced, kind of. Like, she don't really see her emotions that much. But through that, you do see, like, that she is human, that she's not, like, a robot who has one face the entire time. So, I don't know. I did like it. I think that, like what Alex said, it just seemed kind of long. Like, it was kind of drawn out a little bit. But I still thought it was pretty good, I guess.
Yeah, I liked it. You gotta have a variety, because, like, she cannot be that stoic the whole time. Like, you know? Like, she gotta have a little breakdown moment here and there. But the acting was really what sold it for me. Like, even if it seemed way out of character, the way she acted it was, like, really, really good. And the last email is from Rebecca, and this is the record-breaking email. This is the longest email we have ever gotten, folks. I copied and pasted it into Word, and it's 1,448 words.
Oh my!
Please do not try to break that record.
No, you should. This should be a little game.
Try to
beat the record. But Alex, why don't you read a few snippets from her emails?
Okay, Rebecca says, "As for them not explaining A-boxes, I can understand why they left them out, and they weren't crucial to the story, but it kind of took away the creepiness of the Capitol."
So, them not explaining the A-boxes, I'm mixed on this again. Like, I mean, I guess they needed to save time, but really, I do think it's pretty crucial, because right now the Capitol, everybody knows the concept, like, all the audience that's watching this movie already knows, you know, it's kids killing kids. Wow, that sucks. But it seems like if I was just a regular audience viewer, I want something more to know how cruel they are, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Because it seemed like the whole premise is, like, you know, it's overused in the media, so it's like everyone knows. But, like, if you get something else, like, they cut off these people's tongues, that's awful. But, I think we did see an AVOX in the corner. I remember seeing this lady standing.
Yeah, we saw a couple AVOXs. They were just, like, dressed in red, and they looked, like, really creepy, but they don't explain anything.
Yeah, they don't even say they're AVOXs or anything. It's just...
Yeah, but I agree. I think it would have added definitely some creepiness and given some more background about how creepy the Capitol is.
And cruel, just not even creepy.
Yeah,
but, like...
especially. But I think... They would have had to dwell on it, kind of. Like, they would have had to just be like, oh yeah, they cut out their tongue, sort of.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right.
So I think the way they did it was, I think cutting them out was better than just, like, saying it in passing really quickly so that everybody was like, what?
Yeah, I mean, you would have to bring it back here and there. I guess it would have added a lot of time. But
yeah. So I think overall it was better that they just cut them out, I guess, their sake.
Just my little preference, though. They wish, you know. But the next snippet of email is on the Tracker Jackers. She said, "I think this is one of the most well-done scenes in the movie. I love how high she looked. I like Glimmer's bloated body, and I especially like the way they had PETA come up and tell her to run. They played it multiple times, like she was debating whether or not it was real. Also, Caesar looked really freaky in that scene. Just, wow, it freaked me out." And I completely agree. She looked high.
I know, when I was watching it, I was, like, thinking, what did she just start? It was just, like, it was perfect. I loved it.
Honestly, I think you could have been playing, like, Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds in the background, and it would fit perfectly.
Lucy in the da-da-da-da-da. So, Alex, why don't you take the final snippet from her email?
All right. So she says, I really liked how the people looked. They were just weird enough, but not too extreme. I also like how they toned down the actual capital from the books, and how they made it shiny, silvery, and not a colorful Wizard of Oz type city. It's cool in the books, but I think it would have just come off as ridiculous in the movie.
Absolutely. Yeah. And speaking of the capital, I remember in the books they talked about, like, there'll be all these, like, weird gadgets, like, she can click a button and the food will come through all these random tubes. Do you remember that?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, I do agree what you said. I mean, it would just come off as ridiculous in the movie. Because in the books, it's kind of like, okay, you know, you imagine these tubes, but in, like, why would that be in real life? Like, why would they have tubes? You know? Like, it doesn't seem realistic.
Right.
But, yeah, that wraps up our emails for this week. Sorry if we didn't read your email off, but as you can tell, there were a lot. So, yeah, thanks for emailing in. And if you have more emails, we will, next couple of weeks, we'll be emailing, adding in emails about the film as well. But, yeah, email in also on other stuff like Gary Ross's directorship. So now we come into our main discussion, and that is the music. We'll be talking about the companion album with various artists, pop artists that we've been tracking as the weeks have been going on, and also the score by James Newton Howard. So let's start off with the companion album, shall we? This was released a few days before the film was released, and we didn't have time to talk about it last week. But what do you guys think of this overall? All the songs have been released. What do you guys think?
Okay, I think I really like the music. Like, I listened to the album a couple of times through, and I really like the album itself. But I don't like the concept of it. Just it seems so Twilight-y. Like, I guess anyone who's seen the films and knows about it. Which I'm the only one here. But, like, they have, in Twilight, they have the score, and they have this, they have the, like, other music, like the, what is it called? Lyrical music. And so, and it just doesn't, and thankfully they do not have that in this film. They don't have, like, the actual songs that have lyrics and voices and stuff in the background.
Yeah.
But it just seemed like the companion album was so pointless, kind of. Like I liked the music, and I liked all the songs, mostly. But it's just, like, the whole thing as a concept was just kind of stupid.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, for me, it just seemed like this giant money-making thing. It was just like, all right, let's just write a few songs that have something to do with government or strong female roles and stick them in here. And everyone will buy it, and it'll be the number one selling album ever. You know, I mean, it's a nice little album. I don't really like most of the, I mean, okay, how do I say this? It's not really my type of music, a lot of it. But I'm so glad that they didn't put Safe and Sound in the movie, because, like, that is the opposite of the, because there was a TV spot that was released, actually, and I tweeted about this, and it was the Safe and Sound music going on in the back, and it was so cheesy and so corny, and it was, like, so overly sweet. I was just like, if this had been in the film, like, even in the Peter Katniss scene, that would have been so weird. It would have been completely the opposite of the tone.
Actually, did you guys notice that, we'll get into the score in, you know, a few minutes, but in the Ruse Farewell, there actually is a bit of the guitar part of, blah, 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 forgetting what it's called, Safe and Sound.
Oh, there is? They have a little strumming up here?
Yeah, I mean, it's just, like, 1 second, but it's very noticeable.
Okay. Well, I guess that's fine, but, like, the lyrics and the whole, you know, seemed off. But overall, I thought it was good. Do you guys have, like, a favorite song?
Actually, since the last episode, I have become a big fan of Arcade Fire. Mm-hmm. Not because of this album in particular, but
sure.
Abraham's Daughter, pretty, I'd say it's actually my favorite song.
Thank you.
Pretty good.
Yeah.
I really like Tomorrow Will Be Kinder.
Black clouds are behind me. I now can see ahead. Often I wonder why I try, hoping for an end. Sorrow weighs my shoulders down, and trouble haunts my mind. But I know the present will not last, and tomorrow will be kind.
Wow, me too. Okay, I know what's thinking. Hurley, you like Tomorrow Will Be Kinder? It's a sweet song.
Yeah, and I guess it was, like, based off of, American
tragedy.
Tornado, or something like that.
Tornadoes down south, but, I like that one. It reminds me a lot of Winter's Bone.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like, it seems so familiar to me when I heard it. I was just like, wow, this is good. I like Abraham's Daughter, I'm just gonna say this. I like The Ruler and the Killer by Kid Cudi.
What it is,
I like,
it works.
I like the album itself, and I think it's good publicity for all the artists on it, but I think it was kind of just like a money-making thing overall.
Yeah, I mean, which isn't bad, I'm just saying, like, didn't seem focused on the Hunger Games. So now let's move on to something that I have been eager to discuss, and that is the Hunger Games official score by James Newton Howard.
Oh, Hurley, I'm looking forward to this conversation.
Oh, yes. Okay, first of all, Elena, how about you? Have you taken a gander?
Yeah, I listened to, like, half of them. I think overall I listened to them just on Spotify because I'm too poor. I think I liked it, I guess. I don't listen to a whole lot of scores, so, like, I don't know. I don't have that much of an educated opinion or anything. But, I don't know, it seemed kind of like I was, like, underwhelmed almost. Like, it wasn't... I don't know. I think in the movie, too, the score was there, but it wasn't, like, very noticeable. But mm-hmm. I remember thinking that, like, in the middle of the movie, thinking that there wasn't very much music. Like, I don't know. I think it would have been better had they put a little bit more, I guess, into the movie. But, I don't know. I think it was fine, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah. That's interesting coming from somebody who doesn't really look for that, you know?
Yeah.
I know me and Alex... are a little more, we like movies, so we kind of look for the score and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Alex, what'd you think of it? I mean, I think we already discussed the score within the movie, but what do you think of it just on its own?
Upon first listening, yeah, I was very underwhelmed. I mean, it was just a lot of atmospheric music, but then listening to it mm-hmm. again, I realized, yeah, it's atmospheric music, and the more I listened to it, the more I sort of understood how it fit into the movie. It's no Indiana Jones or Star Wars where there's, like, a main theme, obviously
yeah.
there. And I really would have liked that, but listening to it, I actually sort of recognized bits of it from the movie and sort of realized that this actually was providing a lot of, like, the dramatic aspects to the movie. Like, yeah, it's not, like, a soundtrack that we were hoping for, but I think it actually does what soundtracks are supposed to do, and it really did add a bit more substance to the movie.
Right, yeah. I think the thing is, the people were looking for, like, maybe me a little bit, I should have not have, but people were looking for this grand, epic, Harry Potter, Star Wars, Indiana Jones, as you said, type of soundtrack, because, like, when I look at it now, there are two types of soundtracks. There's those that, like, have these identifiable themes, like Harry Potter has this Hedwig's theme. That you just can immediately recognize, and there's like, it's just fun to listen to on its own. Like, it's like these classic songs.
Right.
And then there's these more atmospheric, more deep kind of, not deep, but they're more, yeah, as you said, atmospheric, and they're just, they build the and like how the scene feels instead of these songs that stand better on its own, you know? So I did have a turnaround on it. When I first heard in the film, I was just like, as I said last time, you know, this seems kind of lacking, kind of empty. But I realized that, like, entertainment kind of score that has this identifiable Hunger Games theme wouldn't have worked, because it would have been, like, it would have never fit with the tone of the film. The film is so gritty and realistic that if you, like, start playing this catchy theme, it would have never worked.
Yeah, we all went into this with a bit unfair expectations.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I am trying to imagine how this would have sounded like Elfmanified.
That's interesting. If it was Elfman, I don't think it would have been, like, quirky, like Tim Burton stuff, but it would have had a theme.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we definitely would be saying, like, oh, here it is, we can hum it, or whatever. A lot of the tracks, them being ambient, it really is just, like, a full orchestra just playing the same notes.
Yeah, it's kind of like this one note, and they kind of make it louder, and then the second note, make it louder for a couple seconds.
Right.
But I also should have expected this because it was James Newton Howard, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And that's what he does, atmospheric. I will be playing a few samples of the score right now. This is when Katniss is in District 12, jumping around, getting to the woods. And this is Rue's theme. I'll play a little sample right now. And that's it. That's all you get, folks. Buy it. Or listen to it on YouTube. So for the final segment of the day, we have Hurrock. For Hurrock or Hunger Games Rock, we close out the show each week with the musical selection of one of the host's choice that we think fits well with the Hunger Games. So this week, enjoy a great song that is Alex's pick, Holland 1945 by Neutral Milk Hotel. Alex, why did you pick this song?
Why did I choose this song? If you're one of the five people who actually knows this song, you'll know this song is about, like, what happened after war, and it's, like, people trying to put together their lives. It talks about people on fire, Katniss the Girl on fire, dying with her sister, Prim. And it just has a lot of the same messages as the Hunger Games in general. And I also want to push more hipster music in your face. So, yeah.
He's a hipster pusher. Get away. Okay, so great pick, Alex. Be sure to visit Rebellion Radio Podcast for everything about the show. You'll find handy links to our iTunes and Tumblr. Don't forget to rate us on iTunes and write up a review. But you can also stay updated through our Facebook and Twitter, which are both at /RRPodcast. Discuss with other listeners in the comments at our site, and of course, contact us for anything at all at comments@RebellionRadioPodcast.com. Thanks, everyone, for listening. Enjoy Holland 1944. I'm Hurley Collins.
45.
45, whatever. I'm Hurley Collins.
I'm Alex Bolova.
And I'm Elena Thomas.
Fight the capital and the hunger. Join the rebellion.
2, 1, 2, 3, 4. the only girl I've ever loved was born with roses in her eyes.
I'm sorry.
The only girl I've ever loved was born with roses in her eyes.
You can just just play me singing instead of the actual song.
All right, sing the first part of it, and I'll play that,
no.
And I'll fade into the song.
No.
Yeah, just sing like the first like two lines, and then I'll fade it into the real song or something. I'll figure it out. It'll be cool. I was waving on my phone, by the way, slowly, over my head.
Your what?
My phone, like a lighter.
Ah. Oh, thank you.
Yeah. Hello, everybody, and welcome to Rebellion Radio, episode number 19. I'm Hurley Commons.
I'm Alex Bolova.
And that's my sister. 1 second, let me go kick her out. Sorry.
And that's Sister Thomas. So, Elena's sister is actually the new host on the show.
Yeah,
and
we kicked April out.
Yeah, we kicked April out.
April Fool's.
So welcome, Elena's sister. So Elena's sister, what do you have to say about the film?
Sorry. Hopefully it'll
Elena's
stay
back.
Out, but you know.
Okay, okay, keep it going, because I want to keep down the bloopers. Okay. So Elena, what is the next news story?
Oh, okay, I was in the middle of blowing my nose, but okay. Sorry.
No, blow your nose first, that's fine.
I know you all wanted to know about that. So, Lionsgate isn't... Oh, wait, no, you already said that. Okay. sorry. Okay.
We haven't... Oh, sorry, my nose. Okay.
You and me both, Hurley.
I know. I'm just, like, sick right now.
Why am I not sick all right now? I'm usually blowing.
let's spread our germs to you through the microphone.
Hooray.
Okay, so,
something interesting, though. I remember I was listening to, some other Hunger Games podcast. I think it was the Hypable one. oh, I know. How dare I speak of it?
I know, I listened to it,
so they were saying how,
Yeah, I've heard that, like, the worldwide advertising hasn't been that great, but...
Your audio is really choppy, and now I can't hear you.
I always feel like this is, like, a sign from God that we need to stop podcasting.
No, not a sign from anybody. Okay, you guys hear me? Well, my audacity seems
to work. Okay, now it's all weird again.
Oh, my God! All right, how about now? Test.
You're there.
Yeah.
Testing?
Nah, it's kind of weird still.
Da 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 oompa loompa.